Herzlich willkommen, Open Court, unser Basketball-Podcast. Schön, dass ihr wieder mit dabei seid, der Basketball-Podcast des Deutschen Meisters des FC Bayern Basketball, mit einem Gast, auf den ich mich total freue, denn wir als Basketballfans in Deutschland, wir kennen ihn nicht nur alle, wir schätzen ihn alle, wir lieben ihn alle und spätestens seit dem Sommer 23 ist er auch eine Basketball-Legende in unserem Land und er ist der Cheftrainer des FC Bayern Basketball seit dieser Saison. Dieser Podcast wird in Englisch stattfinden. Ich hoffe, das werdet ihr alle gut und gerne hinbekommen. Ich werde mein Bestes geben, versuchen, kluge Fragen in Englisch zu stellen. Das ist immer ganz spannend, wenn man als Nicht-Native-Speaker dann auf einmal auf einen Native-Interviewpartner trifft. Aber ich glaube, es wird gut, weil er eine Menge Geschichten erzählen kann aus seinem Leben. Und deswegen freue ich mich sehr, dass er da ist. Gordon Herbert. Gordy, hi.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Very nice to meet you. So how do you feel this morning? Vielleicht ganz kurz zur Erklärung. Wir zeichnen auf am Morgen nach dem Sieg gegen Maccabi Tel Aviv und zeigen diese Folge euch auf den verschiedenen Kanälen jetzt rund um Weihnachten. So we have to talk a little bit about Christmas as well, because we broadcast it on Christmas. Gordy, but how do you feel this morning after, I think, a very intensive win yesterday evening?
Yeah, somewhat relieved. It was probably the worst 20 minutes we had played at the SAP Garden this year, the first half.
Yeah, you said, yeah.
And you
said it was your mistake.
Yeah, you know, I made a few adjustments to our defensive game plan because of the team we were playing, and I have to say it backfired. And we came out passive and not aggressive and overthinking stuff, and it showed. And you know, we changed things up at halftime and got back to playing our game a little bit. But guys showed great resilience. Down by 15 with 15 minutes to go, we stayed together as a team. And Shabazz Napier came in. Kevin Yebo came in, gave us great energy. Andy Oakes got really going. So it was a really good last 15 minutes.
And the next win at home in the SAP Garden. So it's an amazing start in the season of the EuroLeague as well. And everybody in basketball in Munich is very happy to see that. I think it's a very intensive season for you because there are so many games in the BBL and in the EuroLeague as well. Are you happy to have a little Christmas break now?
Yeah, it's a grind. A good grind, though. Some sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. But no, I've enjoyed it. I mean, we have a really good group of players, good people. Coaching staff is excellent. Infrastructure around the club is tremendous. So it's been a joy to work here, and I've enjoyed it.
So the break is there, a little break. I think it's very important to be clear in the mind as well. Before our interview this morning, you told me you came from swimming. How often do you that, and how important is it to you, especially after games, for example, to swim, to have a clear mind?
You know, as a coach, you give and you give and you give. The morning, early in the morning, whether it's 6:30 or 7:30, this is a time I try to give to myself.
Mm-hmm. So swimming is a gift.
Yeah, I go swimming and do some, I swim for 30 minutes. I do water running. I do kickboarding. I do about an hour 10 minute workout. Other days I might go for a walk in Olympic Park, or I go to the fitness center and do a, weightlifting workout. So this clears my mind and keeps me healthy. And I need this.
Was it always in your life the same? So you needed it as a young coach as well, when you started your career as a coach?
When I finished playing and I started coaching, I didn't work out that much. I actually put on about 10 kilos and, I learned that to deal with the stress, I had to, you know, get back to the routine of working out and taking care of my body and watching what I eat. And, you know, I've tried to do that over the last 15, 20 years.
So as a coach, for example, to live a life like that, to keep in touch with yourself and to be careful with yourself, are you a kind of role model for your players as well? Do you try to be a role model?
You know, I try to, I have certain core values that I really want to exemplify with the group. And for me, if I want these core values to go throughout the team, I have to set the example. Mm. You know, and the core values I want are trust, respect, commitment. Mm. You know, if we don't have commitment, we can't do anything.
So this is the first part of everything, right? To build a team.
Right. And, you know, I talk about culture of greatness. Mm-hmm. For me, that's vision, core values, and team identity. And now that's the beginning of developing a culture. Are we there yet? No. But we're working towards it.
I think the whole life as a sportsman as well, as a human being, is always learning, right?
Yeah. No, to a certain extent, it doesn't matter what profession we're in, our landscape is changing, you know, weekly, monthly. We have to recreate ourselves. We have to keep learning. We have to keep climbing the mountain. Mm. And are we on the beach feeling good about ourselves? Or are we climbing the mountain, learning, adapting, getting better?
Mm. Cody, let's talk a little bit about the past, when you were a young player, grown up in Canada, and then you moved, in which age you moved to Finland, and why Finland?
Yeah, I grew up in Canada in a place called Penticton, BC, in the Okanagan Valley. Very much like Western Austria type thing, with the mountains, close to the Rocky Mountains.
So no big towns in the near?
No, it was 30,000 people, two lakes on each end, and mountains on both sides.
Okay.
So I grew up playing hockey, snow skiing.
Mm. But no basketball?
Not till later, until I was about 13 or 14, when I kind of grew too quickly to play hockey anymore.
Okay.
Bad/good decision. I was a much better hockey player than basketball player. And... growing up in Canada, that's what we do. We play hockey. And
but sport was very important for you as a child, because your mother was a teacher, sport teacher, right?
She was a sport teacher and a very good athlete, much better athlete than I was. She played all kinds of sports, great tennis player, great golfer, basketball. She was a tremendous athlete. Okay. And my father was the opposite. He was an intellect, a lawyer.
Yeah,
Very smart. Couldn't play sports at all.
But when I see your history as a coach, so you were a professional player on the one hand, so there was the talent by the mother, but you're very strategic coach. So you're a mix from both parents, right?
Yeah, so to speak. I mean, I went to the University of Idaho. I went down to the States for 5 years to play basketball. It was my dream growing up. I had two really goals. Yeah. One was to go to the States and play college basketball. The other was to play for the Canadian national team.
So many young guys have this dream, right? To play for their own country.
Right. And, you know, I only came to Europe really to stay in shape after playing college basketball before I could play for the Canadian team in the summertime.
Okay.
And that's why I came. I always had the intention of just going to Europe for 1 or 2 years, play a little bit, and then go back to law school.
But why Finland?
I had different opportunities coming out of college. I'm not really sure. I had an agent, and he recommended I go there. And I went there, and it was a little bit of a culture shock in the early 1980s. Dark, gloomy, two TV channels.
This is a completely culture shock to come there, right?
It was a real culture shock.
But then you stayed there, so you liked it.
Yeah, you know, in 1984, I met my wife, and it's probably the reason why I stayed.
The first wife, right?
Second.
What was the second? I read about your experience in this case as well.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in threes, but my second wife, and we had two kids together, and and I'm still kind of in coaching. You need a home base, so to speak. because you never know what's going to happen. And so, my, you know, I have a home base in Finland. And
but you reached your goal during this time to play for the Canadian national team. But you were a kind of player number 10, 11 or 12, right, in this team?
Yeah, I played for Canada in the World Student Games in 83. We won the gold medal. Mm-hmm. Olympics 84, we came fourth. World Championships 86, we were sixth. Yeah, you know, that was my goal to play. And I was always 10, somewhere between 9 and 12, mm-hmm. so to speak, 10, 11, and 12, mm-hmm. which really helped me in coaching.
Today.
Because I really understood how important it is and how difficult it is. And, you know, an interesting story, and I think it was 1983 or 82, the national team coach took me aside and said, "You're good enough to make this team, but if your attitude's like last year, we got a bus ticket and you can go home."
Okay, wow.
He says, "You're going to have to learn how to be a good teammate. Support, you might not play a minute, but you're going to have to learn how to do this." And, you know, it was a great lesson for me. And I still refer to that today. And I understand how difficult it is and how important it is that players 10, 11, and 12 are good team people.
To compare it here with your team now at the FC Bayern, what would you say?
You know, we have Elias Harris, really good team guy. Donko Brankovic, good team guy. With the national team, I had the perfect person was Niels Giffey. Mm. The absolutely perfect 11 or 12th man, well-respected, great teammate. His teammates loved him. I kind of wish Niels would have complained once or twice about, because he's actually a very, very good player. He made it too easy for me.
And now you have him here.
Yes.
Yeah. Now he has. But he's more than the number 10, right?
Yeah, he has a big role here.
Yeah.
I mean, Niels brings great qualities to the game. He impacts the game in different ways, and he can impact the game without scoring to help you win. He doesn't need the ball. He doesn't need to score to have a really good game, and this is really important for this team.
Yeah. Because you are talking about Niels, normally I planned to make it later on, but maybe you remember 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, Niels was a guest in my basketball show for the NBA broadcasting, and Niels was there, and we had very nice greetings from you, and he was very happy that you talked about him. And then I asked him to give me something about you. What does he like about coaching? And there's a very interesting example. Let's hear it together, okay?
Okay.
Hey, good morning. Also, finger komplett okay. Wird läuft bloß keine kurzer Schockmoment oder sowas.
I will translate it.
Ja, ich finde das Schöne bei Gordy ist, dass man merkt, dass er dieselbe Person ist und da dieselbe denselben Charakter zeigt, den er auch in der Nationalmannschaft hatte. Einfach jemand, der sehr der auch sehr in sich ruht und da seinen eigenen Weg und seinen eigenen Plan hat. Und ich würde mal sagen, nicht zu viel heiß und zu viel losgeht, sondern eher diese Kultur prägen möchte und das auf einem konstanten Level. Wovon ich beeindruckt bin, ich dachte, das wäre nur eine Sache vom Sommer, sind diese Mid-Court-Spiele, die wir manchmal machen, oder beim Shootaround, wenn wir vom Half-Court werfen für Geld oder für so kleine Lotto-Tickets, dann bin ich immer wieder beeindruckt, wie viel er davon hat. Also das ist schon über so eine Saison gesehen ein beträchtliches Investment, was er da an die Mannschaft gibt. Ich dachte, das wäre über so einen Sommer gesehen ein übersichtlicher Betrag, aber jetzt über eine Saison greift er da schon tief in die Tasche.
So first thing he said, he's very impressed that you show here the same character, the same coaching as in the national team. Culture is very important, as you said, the one thing. And then he's talking about the midcourt game, so throwing from the logo, for example, that you have that you always build a team with this. He thought it's only in the summer, but you are playing this with the players during the whole season. And he said it's a big investment for the coach because it's so much money and so much lottery tickets.
Yeah, I was hoping to get a lottery sponsor.
Yes, you're searching for that.
The players asked me if I got those for free because nobody wins.
why is a game like this for the players so important and for you as a coach as well?
No, for me, it's important that when I come to practice, I enjoy it. Mm. And I want them to enjoy coming to practice. I want them to have a little bit of fun, laugh sometimes, show some emotion, smile. And I think when we enjoy what we do, we have a much better chance to be successful. Mm. You know, if we'd rather go to the dentist and come to practice, we're in trouble.
Yeah. So back to your time as a player, as a young player in Finland, or later on when you grew up a little bit, then became a coach. Did you make experience like this? The example Niels said. Did you make experience like this with your coaches?
No, not really. I mean, when I was in college, and our coaches were pretty tough.
Yeah.
No, we never really did this kind of thing. I'm not sure where I got it from. You know, I just think it's when you shoot a half court shot, it's the last thing you do before you leave practice on game day, the morning of the game. And, you know, it just relieves the tension.
Mm-hmm.
And so guys can relax a little bit. It's not tense and this and that. So that's kind of why I do it. It's the last thing we do. We also play poker. If we don't have a morning shoot around, we might play poker, and the winner takes something home.
where did you learn this? That this, for you, in your personal opinion as a coach, is so important.
I have no idea where I got it from. Really,
did you have a teacher or something like that for this?
No,
these are social skills, you know.
Yeah, you know, when I started coaching the national team, I had to get better as a communicator. I had to develop relationships, because that's what national team coaches are all about. You have them for a short period of time. And also with the national team, you have to, they're dedicating part of their free time, getting away from the family, summertime to the national. I need to make it enjoyable. We need to make it enjoyable for these players, that they want to be there, that they enjoy being with each other. And to a certain extent, I think that's what really helped us be successful, was we enjoyed being there.
So when a player, for example, thinks too much about the family or had a problem with the family because he's so often so far away during the summer, during the whole season, nearly the whole year, because the break when you play for the national team in the summer, the break is maybe 2 or 3, nearly 4 weeks, not more. That's not easy for a family, right? So the family business isn't easy. And you know that very well, right?
No, it's not easy for the spouses, the kids.
Yes.
And but, you know, we tried to have very short training camp.
Mm.
And then we had breaks in between. And sometimes we would bring the Federation was good about bringing the families in for 3-4 days at different times. So it worked out pretty well. But it is a commitment, and that you're away from your family and you're giving up your free time during the summertime.
How much of you is basketball coach, sport teacher, and how much is the psychologist? You know what I mean, because yes. You have to talk so much with the players during the basketball.
Yeah, I use a psychological approach quite often. Mm. Players don't know it, but I know it.
You know it. So, are you good at that? What would you say?
You'd have to ask the players. I
okay.
No, You know, when I started coaching, I was very big on strategy, X and O's. I didn't focus on culture and team building and this and that. Now I'm the exact opposite. I'm big on building a culture, team building, creating a team, and then comes the strategy. You need both, but you have to have a balance.
That's interesting because when you said now I'm the opposite of that when I was young as a coach, but I think it wasn't a mistake, right? Because the whole life as a coach is development as well, right?
Yeah, and I had to really develop myself as a coach and learn. Mm-hmm. I had been playing in Finland and Belgium, and you know, I had to really recreate myself way back then. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, now as a coach, I do nothing what I did 20 years ago.
Yeah. When you started your career, for example, in Germany, it was in Frankfurt, right?
I started in Würzburg in 2000.
In Würzburg. First Austria?
Würzburg,
and then Frankfurt.
Frankfurt,
yes. Right. So that was a completely different Gordy.
Yeah, it was pretty emotional, pretty yell and scream, demanding type thing. But there were certain times I would go home at night after practice. I looked in the mirror and I didn't like what I saw.
Why?
It just wasn't me. I was, and I learned that it took me a long time, but I learned I could demand without yelling and screaming. I could create an atmosphere of hard work, of energy, without yelling and screaming. It was more about communicating, and it might be more individualized and than team-wise sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm not real happy the way I was at certain times. I broke TVs, I broke stuff. I got pretty intense, but I think I got through that part. I like myself much better now.
Now, yeah. When is there a moment when this changed into now a very, I would call it calm, Gordy?
I would say it was probably 2019 when I worked with Nick Nurse and the Canadian national team. Mm-hmm. He never raised his voice. I worked with Kenny Atkinson as a coach consultant with the Brooklyn Nets. He never raised his voice. Then I took the job with the German national team. I raised my voice one time in 3 years.
When?
During the Slovenian game at the World Cup with Dennis.
And Daniel. The scene, a very, very great scene for sure, because every player of the German national team that was a turning point in the tournament.
Yeah, I think, you know, we faced some adversity then, but we embraced it. A funny thing happened after that. You know, I sat Daniel and Dennis down until I saw them standing up cheering their teammates on again, and then they put them back in the game and they played great. They went to the locker room. The players went to the locker room and locked the door. I didn't hear this till later. They locked the door. Nobody got in, and they talked it through.
Wow.
We had high standards. Mm-hmm. They had high standards, and they held not only themselves accountable, but their teammates. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what happened in that locker room, but when I got there, the door was unlocked. I had no idea what I was going to see at halftime. But when you go into a locker room at halftime, you kind of read the room a little bit before you talk. And guys' heads were up. They were attentive. Eyes were up. We were ready to go.
So everybody in Germany saw this team. So that was the only time you raised your voice in 3 years.
Yeah, that was it.
Did you raise the voice here in Bayern?
Last night at halftime, yes.
Okay. But it's not so often because you're much calmer. As you said, that was different in the first years in Germany as well. In the time in Frankfurt, it was a very successful time because you won the championship with Frankfurt. Why Germany? As you said, Finland, I think, was your second home country after your time in Canada. You love fishing. You love the nature. So Finland is, in my opinion, a very nice country for you to live. And I know you're sometimes there making a little bit of holiday, fishing as well, I think, right? watching hockey.
But then Germany, why Germany?
You know, Germany was my break as far as coaching. Getting into Würzburg, going to Frankfurt, that was my big break. You know, Finland back then was not a good basketball country. Austria was not a good basketball country. Those were good starters for me to learn about coaching and get through the process. But Germany was a stepping stone for me to get into Würzburg for 1 year, go to Frankfurt for 3 years. That was my breakthrough. And yeah.
And then you developed. Then your career all over Europe. You went to France, for example.
Yeah.
I think that was an intensive time as well when you compare the French basketball in the two, I think it was 2006, six, seven, eight, nine.
Yeah.
Paris, for example, and other teams. When you compare the basketball there with the German basketball in that time, France was a little bit more a better team, the national team as well. They had Tony Parker, for example, and guys like this. Better than Germany.
Yeah,
we had Dirk Nowitzki, okay.
It was a little bit better league, I thought, at that time. You know, and then I went to Greece after France, which was a great experience.
With the most craziest fans
in
Serbia and in Greece, right?
Yeah, and that's when Greek basketball was at a extreme high.
Mm.
And we were in the EuroLeague, and it was great, great, great atmosphere, unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know, I thought the German league and probably 3-4 years ago was better than the French league, but now the French league seems to have gone ahead of the German league after the Corona situation,
mm-hmm.
And the German league really is just starting to recover now, I think.
I have to. What would you say? Why? And what does recover mean in this case?
Yeah, I'm not sure why what happened, but I thought before Corona, the German league was really up and up and up, going up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the situation, I thought it took a long time for the top three or four clubs in Germany were still good. I thought it was a big drop off. From teams 8 to 18,
mm-hmm.
as far as because of the financial situation,
mm-hmm.
of Corona going through that, I think it really affected a majority of the teams.
Mm. So the German league is, I think, an intensive league because everybody can beat everybody, right? And this is the experience you make this year, right?
Yes, I think it's. I mean, I thought last year the German league was okay.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I think it's made a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody can beat anybody. Yeah. And you look at the standings.
That's crazy.
Which is good for basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good for the fans.
Very good.
I think we all doing this for the fans, for sure. Without fans, there's nothing possible. You can make sport for sure,
yeah.
But it's a kind of entertainment as well. And I think this is very important. But the American basketball, for example, and you made the experience in the NBA, this is much more entertainment than here in Europe, right?
Yeah, it's much more entertainment. They really sell the individual in the States. And because of the defensive rules, it's much more individualized and much more of a, you know, people go watch a individual show, so mm-hmm. to speak, in a team sport.
Yeah.
I think in Europe we have much better team basketball.
So team basketball, for example, means the ball is much faster. We have more ball contacts than in the NBA. So the individuals in the NBA are much more. There's always the discussion about 3-point shooting, for example.
Yeah.
But you have Andy Obst.
No, I'm a big believer in three-point shots. I mean,
yes, now you have to.
You know, we shoot, I think, 31 or 32 a game. I would like to get that up to between 35 and 40.
Sure.
I'm a big – and, you know, our team is, especially in the EuroLeague, we need to spread the floor.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a big physical basketball team. Our strength, we have to play to our strength, and our strength is on the offensive end, spreading the floor, opening up the game and shooting threes.
Let's talk about one point later on, your personal, for sure, but the game against Barcelona, and Andy made this 11 three-pointers. I think that was an amazing game, right?
How was this for you looking from the bench?
You know, I just, it got to the point where in the second half, we were just playing really good basketball and making shots. And I just kind of, you know, I wish I would have went down and sat down and just watched.
like a normal spectator, right?
Yeah. You know, there's certain times.
Oh, this is the biggest compliment you can make as a coach, right?
Yeah. When you don't have to, you can just kind of, they play.
Yeah.
And they're playing the right way and playing with intensity and sharing the basketball. And, you know, that's, you know, there's certain times where this team has really played really good basketball.
Cody, what was your thought when the first offer or the first idea came by FC Bayern to become coach here in this club? When was this?
You know, I guess Pablo Laso decided to leave. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there was contact. And
how is contact like this? Can you tell me something about this? So is your phone ringing and Marco Pizic is there and say, hi, Gordy, let's talk? Or how does this work?
Yeah, I think Marco phoned and just asked me what my situation was. And we talked a little bit. And, you know, I had some other offers on the table. And
but for sure, as the world champion coach, huh?
But for me, it was I wanted to stay in Germany, mm-hmm. and with our, you know, we had 5 German national team players here, mm-hmm. so, and obviously it was always a dream of mine to coach Bayern Munich ever since I was in Germany, just with the brand and the city and the culture here and how this club is growing. So it was a no-brainer for me.
How is the situation of the club at the moment? What would you say?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Why?
Just the infrastructure, the people working there. And, you know, the strength that, you know, we have in the office, a lot of younger people, energy, enthusiasm. They look like they enjoy being there. Mm. And I think the club does a great job treating them well. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks like they come to work with a passion. And so, you know, it's a great place to work.
I think in your life, maybe you can deny it, but I think in your life, atmosphere is very important. Atmosphere in a team, atmosphere in a club, atmosphere between people, right?
Absolutely. And I think the one great thing about this club is they create an atmosphere to work in. Mm. And so I think, you know, anytime you go into a club where there's a good atmosphere or a good situation to work, it's really good. And obviously there's stress, there's pressure.
For sure.
You know, but I've always kind of said, you know, the more pressure you have, the better job you have.
How do you deal when the team lose a game? How do you deal with that? Or is there a difference when a team plays good and lose, or when a team doesn't play good, in your opinion?
You know, I've always tried to, when we don't play well, I'll stand behind the team and I'll take the blame. Mm-hmm. You know, something happened. I mean, I took the blame last night when we didn't play well in the first half. That was my fault.
Mm-hmm. You said it.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it's tough. We're in a result-oriented business. Wins and losses. People judge you by wins and losses. And I judge is how we play. Mm. Do we play good basketball or not? There were certain times this year we won a couple games here at the BMW Park. We won, but we did not play well. Mm. So, you know, I wasn't really happy with that. And for me, as the season goes on, it's not about wins and losses. It's about are we getting better or not? Are we improving? Because where are we going to be in 2 months, in 3 months, in 4 months? This is the key for us.
Mm-hmm. How important is it to tell the people, first the team, and then the audience as well, to tell the people we have a goal? For example, everybody knows the goals from 4 years now ago, or nearly 4 years ago when you started as a head coach for the German national team. As I said, okay, 3 years, 3 medals. And everybody said, okay, he's completely crazy. You remember that. And then the first game, I think, against Estonia.
We lost.
You lost. And then, yeah, okay. That's an old story. But you have a goal as well here. And you said, we want to reach the Euro League Final Four.
No, I think it's important when you come in, you have a vision. Yeah. Where are you going? Mm-hmm. We cannot be afraid of failure. People do not give a vision because they're afraid of failure. What happens? We don't know. They give a little bit of wiggle room on where they want to go. Mm-hmm. You know, our vision is win the German championship, win the German Cup, Euro League Final Four. That's the vision I gave.
What will happen when you don't get it?
I don't think about that right now.
Okay, but this is, I asked this as a German guy. This is a typical German question, I think. Yeah. Why are we so negative? I have to ask.
But 50-50 sometimes you don't reach it.
I'm sorry for that I ask it. But now when I ask it, I think, no, this is typical German. That's not good. And your answer is so great to say, I don't think about that.
No, I honestly believe we have a chance to be a EuroLeague Final Four if we really come together as a team. We have team strength. We're a great group. Because within that group, when you're a team, the individuals have a chance to be even better. Mm-hmm. If we play as individuals, we're not going to get there. But if we play within the team structure, we need the individuals. Eh? But we need the team first.
Mm-hmm. A very important part in your team, in your coaching staff, is your son, Daniel. Mm-hmm. Would you say you're a better coach or a better father?
Would he say? That's a good question.
I have to ask him.
That's a good question. I hope he says both.
Both,
yeah. he's got an outstanding future. His basketball IQ is better than mine. Will he ever be a really head coach? I'm not sure. But he has a chance to be a top assistant coach. Okay. Lead assistant.
So what is the main difference to be the head coach or lead assistant, for example?
You know, nobody thought I was going to be a head coach when I started coaching. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, it's a little bit about taking charge. You got to change your perspective a little bit. You're not the good guy all the time. As an assistant coach, you become a good bad guy, so mm-hmm. to speak. But he has great communication skills, very good with individual workouts. He communicates well with players. Something I never did at his age.
Okay. So this is a big compliment for your son?
Yeah, I think he has it's hard for me to talk about my son, but I think he's got a tremendous future.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
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 So you believe in your son?
No, absolutely. I mean, he's one of the, I've been coaching for 30 years. He's one of the best assistant coaches I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you don't say this because it's your son. No.
No. I mean, TJ Parker's been outstanding this year. Mm. Klaus Pervis, him and I were together in Frankfurt in the national team. He's probably the mm-hmm. my glue guy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's Mr. Negativity. I'm Mr. Positivity when we're together.
Klaus is Mr. Negativity. Yeah. Really?
No, but I love Klaus because he gives his opinion. He's not a yes guy. Mm-hmm. He gives his opinion. He's straightforward. There's no gray area with him.
Yeah. So, talking about your son, how do you live with them here in Munich? Is it like a flat together or everybody has a space or
different
parts of the city?
No, we have different flats. He's about 1 kilometer away from us. I hardly see him. Mm. He calls me coach. He doesn't call me dad. Even when we're together, he calls me coach.
Yeah.
We've kind of, you know, and that's the way it should be.
Do you celebrate Christmas together?
Yeah, I've ordered German Christmas food, and him and I will have Christmas together. I ordered.
What did you order?
Goose dumplings.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. For 5 people, but okay. There's only 2 of us.
It's only you and your son.
No, I love the German Christmas, and I want, you know, wherever I am, whatever country I am, I try to not only respect that culture, mm-hmm. but live that culture. And
when you talk about your teams, you're always talking about culture. You're always talking about the very special spirit you try to create, and very often it works. What does family mean to you?
It's the most important. My kids are my most important. I talk a lot about threes. You know, I have three things that are really important in my life. you know, and the first thing is family and my kids. Been divorced, married three times, divorced three times, but still good friends with both the wives. So.
Yeah. But I think this is very interesting, very important. You don't have to talk about that, but I think it's interesting because when you're talking and when you're talking about basketball interviewing and all that, you are always so very strategic, and I believe every word what you say. And I say, yeah, he's so right. Yeah, he's so right. Building culture, building a team, building all that. Why are you divorced so many times? What didn't work? You know what I mean?
No, I think it's this job has a real effect on your spouse. Mm-hmm. You know, are they ready to move from country to country, live this life? And a lot are not. Mm-hmm. And I understand that completely. A lot of women want to have their own house, be in one place, raise a family, be there, have stability, not moving from apartment here to apartment there. So,
Did you had this wish sometimes to live a normal life in one house, in one place, seeing the child's growing up?
No, I missed part of you know, that's why it's really special with my son here, because I missed part of my kids growing up because of my job, my selfishness.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'll never get that back. But I try to make it up as much as I can.
Do you think sometimes about that fact?
Sure.
That this didn't work in your life?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I missed part of my kids growing up.
And what is your kids' opinion about that fact?
They really don't say much. I think they always like to be in different countries and visit. And I mean, they lived in Germany for a period, in France for a period. So, but obviously.
So the kids were always with you?
Not always. I mean, they were with their mother in Finland sometimes, and sometimes, I think, 2 years in Germany, 1 year in France, and that was it. So I missed quite a bit of their life, and that will always bother me. Mm. And, you know, and to a certain extent, I hate to say it, but it's true, I put my own profession ahead of my family life. And
this is a decision for sure.
Yeah. And
not always a good one.
No.
And when you become older and older, you think more about that, right?
Absolutely. The great thing is I have a great relationship with my kids. We spend time together a lot. So that's really important for me.
So the Christmas time now together with your son, so it's only you two, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Together. And then watching hockey as well, or watching basketball. Do you like more watching basketball or more watching hockey? When you have free time.
When I became the German national team coach, it's probably the first time in my life I watched more basketball than hockey.
Okay. It's kind of a job, huh?
Yeah, because I had to watch players.
Right.
And I watched basketball to analyze stuff, to get prepared for the next team, to go through our games. That's why I watched basketball. But I have to say, this year, I've watched a lot of EuroLeague basketball games because it's just really good basketball.
Yeah.
And, but for example, this morning I woke up at 4:30 and I watched the hockey game a little bit. I watched Vancouver Canucks play. So I love watching hockey because I can sit back and enjoy it. I don't analyze it. I can enjoy it. It's fast. It's exciting. There's some physical contact. And
have you ever seen a hockey match? So in Germany we say ice hockey, but I think everybody knows that we are talking about ice hockey. So did you ever see a hockey match here in Munich or in Germany?
Sure. When I coached in Berlin, I went to games in Berlin. But I have not been to a game in Munich.
No.
No.
It's the same arena.
I know. I've got to know people there. So I look forward to going and watching the game real soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Our schedule is so tough. When I have a free night, I'll just stay at home, maybe watch a movie or cook, make something, and then I'll just I go to bed sometimes at 9:30.
And then you grew up at?
I get up at 6:30.
Not grew up, get up for some.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I try to be my best English. Yeah. It's not so easy. Learning as well. So you get up at 6:30.
Yeah, I usually get up between 6 and 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's when my brain works, I think, the best.
Gordy, when you're watching, for example, basketball together now with your son, who makes the better analysis?
He does.
He does, yeah, because his IQ is higher than yours, as you said a few minutes before.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have pretty good basketball IQ, but compared to him, no, he's just really good. He sees the game. He's got a feel for the game that you can't teach.
So is it like this? I can imagine, or I try to imagine, you sit together in one of your flats, what, on the couch, maybe a little drink or something like that, and then watching, for example, an NBA game when our German plays, for example, Brooklyn with Dennis plays against Orlando with Moritz and Franz and Tristan as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say something and then he'll disagree with me.
But this is kind of typical between father and son, right?
Yeah, no, we go through game plans and he'll disagree with me.
Yeah.
Last night during the game in the first half, he said to me, he said, "This is the worst 20 minutes I've ever seen in basketball."
Really?
Yeah, this year.
What happened then with you in your mind when your son says something like this?
No, I respect honesty. I respect straightforwardness. And sometimes you don't like it, but I respect it.
And you respect this by your players as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, I try to create what I call psychological safety with players.
Psychological safety.
Yeah, this is where a player can come to you and say something or give an opinion, and he's not afraid for me to blast him.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll give you an example. World Championship, before the World Championships, we played the United States in Abu Dhabi. Franz Wagner came to me after the game and said, "Coach, what we're doing against switching is not working.
Not a good defense."
And so we went back with the coaches and we figured it out. We came back and I said, "Franz, what do you think now?" He says, "Much better, coach."
Okay, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, Andy Oates, I have that psychological safety with him, and Joe Folkman with this team. They can come, Andy will come to me sometimes and say stuff. He's very intense sometimes, and which I like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wants to win. His heart is with Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
And this team. And, I mean, he opens up and says stuff to me sometimes, too. I might not like it all the time, what he says, but I really respect that he has an opinion and comes to me. He says some really good things.
Wow. That's interesting. And maybe it's a kind of secret for good coaching.
I think we learn from our players. Mm. I mean, I learn from Shabazz Napier. He's got great basketball IQ. I learned from him. And Nick Weiler-Babb has got very good basketball IQ. So you learn from your players. You have to listen to your players.
When you decided to have Shabazz, for example, in this team here with Bayern Munich, did you talk with Niels before? Because he knows him very well from the college time.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Folkman played with him parts of 2 years in Milan.
Oh, it was Niels. I think it was
Niels played 4 years in college with him.
Okay, right. Yeah. Niels was in the college time and Joe was in Milan.
Yes. So, you know, I talked to both of them. Both of them, great things to say. And great teammate. And he's been everything even, and even more than what they said.
So you bring opinions together?
No, I just asked what their opinion was. I wanted to make sure he was a good guy, good in the locker room. Mm. It wasn't so much about his playing ability. It was more about the person.
And I think in your teams, playing is, and the individuals are very important for sure. But and I think in your teams, it's very important how does a team work next to the court, right?
Yeah, I mean, how are we in the locker room? How are we off the floor? Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't have each player might not like each other so much sometimes, but they have to respect and trust each other and get along.
Yes.
And build sacrifice. But with this Bayern Munich team, the one thing is we have tremendous people. Better people than players. And that's why it's a joy and an honor to coach this group.
So your plan is to stay a long time here in Munich? So the decision to come to Bayern was not only for 1 or 2 years?
I have no idea. That's out of my control.
Okay. I know, but maybe you have a wish because you like this club so much. You like the atmosphere. You like your players.
Yeah, I mean, I really have a good relationship with Herbert Hainer.
Okay.
I really like the whole situation here. It's a great place to coach. But you know, in this job, you never know. I go by day, week by week, game by game, and try to do the best I can. And
so many things worked so well in your career because you are like you are. The World Championship, I think, with the German team was, wow. As a coach, to reach something like this is amazing. It's awesome. But do you have a dream after a big coaching career like this? Do you have a goal? I want to coach an NBA team, for example. I want to coach the Finnish national team or something like that. Is there anything?
No, I'm really happy and blessed where I am right now.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know, Marco's got a big vision where this club wants to go. I have a vision. My whole thing is, you know, I'd like to get to the EuroLeague Final Four and see if we could win it. And that's what I would like to do. That's the next step for me and for this club.
What would you say now after half of the season? How realistic is it to reach this Final Four?
You know, we got a really tough schedule coming up. I think four of our next five games are on the road. We need to play better on the road. We need to play a little bit different than we do at home. Mm-hmm. And so that'll start Sunday. We play in Rostock and then Monaco and then Milan. So we'll see if we can play some, and that's my job. Is to get us to play better basketball on the road, more control, be able to control the tempo better on the road. You know, we play a little bit, we play real up-tempo at home. We got to be able to play a little bit different on the road.
Why is it so different on the road for a player?
Just the atmosphere, I think. And, I mean, our DNA as a team is to play up tempo and play offense. Mm-hmm. And we're better offensively than I thought we would be. And we're not as good defensively as I thought we would be.
Yeah.
So, but we have to get our defense to be a staple. Right now, our defense is a little bit of a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get that better to be a staple.
So there's a clear analysis of the situation. Looking forward, moving forward now to the second half of the season, right?
Yeah, we just have to become more constant on the defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
I think offensively we can score with anybody and play with anybody.
Yeah.
Defensively, we need to be better.
When you started here in Munich in the summer, or during the summer, I heard a story. I don't know if it's right, but you were told that there are nearly 80 or 85 games a season, and you said in a very spontaneous situation, oh, fuck. Is that right? The first reaction?
I mean, I just looked at the calendar about 2 days ago. I couldn't believe it was December already. I have no idea what day it is sometimes. And yeah,
it's completely crazy, right?
Yeah, just, you know, we fly to Turkey, we fly back, we play one game, we fly to Serbia, we fly back, we go somewhere else. It's a grind.
Do we have time for training with the team to work on it?
Not as much as I would like.
Yeah.
You know, and our roster, because it's Madar left, or we sold him, so to speak, I guess you could say. Giffey and Lukic were both hurt, so our roster was quite thin. And we had to play guys a lot in a little bit too many minutes in the BBL.
Mm.
You know, the ideal situation would be where you can rest two or three players every BBL game and have fresh legs in the BBL. You know, right now we don't have that situation, but I've got to figure that out better too with our players and coaching staff and how we can do that.
So you are responsible for that, right?
Yeah, you know, and our players are very motivated to play EuroLeague.
Mm, for sure.
Then we come to BBL and not so motivated sometimes.
Is it like this, yes?
Yeah, it's, I think it's human nature.
It's human nature because it's a different thing to play in, for example, in Belgrade,
yeah,
than in whatever.
Yeah.
And fully, I say this, fully respect in Heidelberg, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it's a very nice, very traditional club in Germany,
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes. Nice city, too.
Nice city as well, yeah.
But yeah, it's just human nature.
Human nature.
Yeah.
At the end, Gordy, what is your personal wish for 2025?
Just continued good health.
Good health.
Good health.
So swimming as often as you can.
Good health. Enjoy life day by day better than I do now.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Smile more. and enjoy life. Laugh. Build laugh. I think it's important not only laugh with others, but build laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So you are fully in love, hopefully in the next year with yourself. And maybe to another person. Uh-huh. It's getting private.
No, you always, you know, I think you always want somebody you want to grow old with and spend life with.
For sure.
And laugh and joy and travel. And
this is human nature as well.
Yeah. No, I never thought I'd be coaching when I was 65 like I am now. I thought, you know, there's 5-6 years ago, I thought I was done. I was quitting. I didn't enjoy coaching anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was frustrated.
You wrote a book about that.
Yeah, I wrote a book and yeah, it was a bestseller apparently for 5 weeks. And, you know, I came open with some stuff and people have complimented me on that.
Die Jungs gaben mir mein Leben zurück.
Yeah.
The boys gave back my life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I just...
It's an amazing book.
Coaching.
My compliment.
Oh, thank you.
I loved it to read it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
No, those players were unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, seeing Dennis Schroeder grow like he did as a leader and within the group and just the rest of the players.
But Dennis needs atmosphere as well to make an example because in the NBA, at the moment, he has a great atmosphere in Brooklyn. So he's a great player, like an all-star player, like in the national team. But the years before, he was a good NBA player. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
When he has a great atmosphere, when he has a coach, when he feels the trust of the coach, then it's like an explosion, right?
Yeah.
And at the moment, with Jordi Fernandez, a European coach, it's interesting, from Spain. It works so great because I think he feels the same trust he felt with you.
Yeah, I was in Brooklyn last year, and they told me when Dennis got traded to Brooklyn, he changed the atmosphere in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't realize what a great competitor he is. He competes like no one else. Franz Wagner competes like no one else. And when you have your two best players compete like they do, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Dennis is a great competitor.
Mm-hmm.
He's a competitor.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to see where he is right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's in his contract year. Franz just signed a big deal. And I think, you know, hopefully Dennis gets a big deal after this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got a lot of years left.
Mm. NBA is sometimes like a lottery, huh? We will see. Now, at the moment, they are discussing with the Golden State Warriors and all that. But we don't know yet. But we talked about your personal goals and the goals for the club you set. With every guest, at the end, I make a kind of power ranking. But it's quite easy. A very easy power ranking. Which are the players, or in your case, the coaches, impressed you, your top three impressed you most in your life? Players or coaches? Playing against, watching on TV.
No,
everything is possible. I need three persons.
You know, David Blatt had a huge influence on me as far as coaching offense, mm-hmm. getting better as an offensive coach.
So not everybody knows him. He was coach?
No, yeah, he was coach in Europe, won the EuroLeague, in Maccabi for a long time, coached in the NBA for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, right now he's really sick.
Mm-hmm.
We played against his son last night. Coach Pesic.
Svetislav.
Yeah, he's been a huge influence. You know, he's came to my office a few times and gave me three pointers. What we need to do better and this and that. But Coach Bessage really cares about this club. He has heart for this club. Obviously, his son runs it.
He was coach.
Yeah. But he feels it.
And Svetislav is a German coach legend.
Yeah.
And he was the only legend because of the title in 1993. And now you are the second.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we share that together. And I think
30 years later.
Yeah. No, you know, we beat them in the World Cup and they beat us in the Olympics. Yes. So, yes. Yeah. And then, you know, Coach Messina is a friend. And, you know, I phoned him a couple times in the World Cup to get his advice on a couple things. And he was straightforward and gave me his advice. Tremendous person. Mm. I don't know Coach Obradovic that well from Partizan, but obviously I have tremendous respect for him. For me, he's one of the greatest coaches of our time, NBA, Europe, wherever. Mm.
You're talking about the coaches, not the, there are no players, more coaches. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, players, I've really enjoyed coaching. Obviously, Johannes Folkman, I had him in Frankfurt and now with the national team and now
here.
He's got great life values, family person, life values, professional. You know, I've always enjoyed coaching him and, you know, and great in the locker room.
Mm.
You know, he's the one player I can always, I have a, you know, I think he backs me up too, which is really important. You know, I've seen Andy Oakes grow throughout the years with the national team.
Mm.
You know, it's hard for me to say any national team players are all, they were all tremendous.
For sure.
All of them.
For sure.
I mean, and it's hard for me to pick out one. I mean, Dennis Schroeder's growth as a captain. Nils Giffey, not playing a minute sometimes, but being a very, very important team person.
As you said, and now he's here, and we are wishing you for sure, because we are the podcast from the FC Bayern Basketball, the same success with the German, like with the German national team. As you said, the club grew up in the last years, so great, and now plays a big role in Europe. We are, as fans, very thankful for that, wishing you the best for the second part of the season and the new start after a little bit more calmer summer, right? Yeah. In Finland, yeah?
Yeah. No, the one person I'd like to mention, too, is Moritz Wagner.
But yeah.
A great character. Unbelievable.
Funny guy.
Unbelievable personality.
Yeah.
Great for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really good. I mean, I think two, 3 years ago, he was almost out of the NBA. And now he's really established himself in Orlando, and he's really made a name for himself.
Yeah, you talk like wishing to have him here.
Yeah,
he helps every team, I think.
Yeah,
because of his character, his wonderful character, right?
Yeah, he's just his personality is
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see the documentary about them?
I have it. I'm going to watch it tonight. Actually.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's in German. But what about your German?
It's not very good. I've studied German. I took some intense courses a few years ago, just myself and a teacher for 1 week. And
okay.
I had an intern work with me in Frankfurt. But then I left Germany in 2019. I never thought I was coming back.
Okay.
But it's a difficult language.
Difficult, yeah.
For me, so, I
tried my very best to talk in English with you, but I hope you understood everything.
That's great.
You did.
I have Finnish. I speak Finnish, but I think Finnish takes up most of my brain. I don't have room for another.
Okay, let's quit with that. Gordy, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me as well. It was an amazing talking. Thank you so much. And ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, dann sagt es gerne weiter. Teilt es in den sozialen Medien. Alles, was dazugehört, das kennt ihr schon. 5 Sterne in den entsprechenden Portalen, freuen uns auch. Wenn es euch nicht gefallen hat, schweigt bitte für immer. Aber ich glaube, mit diesem Mann zu sprechen und von ihm so viel zu hören, Gordon Herbert, das ist schon etwas ganz, ganz Besonderes. Und hier habe ich noch das Trikot, noch in der Rohversion. Ihr folgt einfach weiter auf unserem Kanal. Da werden wir dieses Trikot noch unterschrieben von einigen Spielern. Gordy wird natürlich auch unterschreiben. Noch
verlosen. Einfach gucken auf unserem Kanal des FC Bayern Basketball. Eine gute Zeit, einen guten Rutsch ins neue Jahr. Wir hören uns im neuen Jahr wieder. Ich würde mich sehr freuen. Danke für die Treue in diesem. Und jetzt eine schöne Silvesterparty euch allen. Alles Gute. Das war Open Court, unser Basketball-Podcast in diesem Jahr. Wir kommen 2025 zurück. Versprochen.